Hello, everyone. I'm going to start out with a slide, and I want to introduce you to a lady. Chris, do we have that? Well, I'll start the introduction, and hopefully her picture will follow on its heels. When the picture arrives, this is Dr. Carol Swain, who I had never heard of probably 3 or 4 months ago. And this lady was a high school dropout and a teenage mother. And again, she's probably in her 60s, so this would have been in the 50s or 60s when she was a high school dropout. Said she went from GED to PhD because in her later career, she became an award-winning political scientist at Vanderbilt University in Nashville. But before joining Vanderbilt in 99, Dr. Swain was a tenured associate professor of politics and public policy at Princeton University. So this woman has been very high achieving in her life. She is the host and creator of something called Be the People TV. And I'll have to be honest with you, I've not been to this website. But I want to tell you about seeing her speak in person. You can also go to carolswain.net, which was up there. But I love the whole idea of Be the People. Because what is that in reference to? Surely some of us know. It's we the people, right? And that's how our Constitution, and also that's probably used in the Declaration of Independence as well. We are the people, and we have been given a form of government that allows us to be participating in it. And, you know, Jim is, I love his sermons because he's such a history buff, and I'm a history person, and he's always giving you facts about history. And he talked the other day about the kinds of governments of the world, and that really plays right into what I'm going to talk about a little bit here today. And that's what she's talking about. And I'll tell you where I'm headed here in just a second. She said something that's been on my mind for a long time, and that was the fact that the Christians in the United States have abdicated our civic leadership duties and allowed the ungodly to rule over us. One of the things Dr. Swain talked about after the comments on abdicating our civic leadership duties was about the evil of abortion. And that's something I've spoken about before that my wife really got me interested in. I grew up in the Methodist church, which I always call that Christianity light. We didn't even have Bibles in church. When you went to church, there was only two scriptures. You didn't need a Bible, and they were only one line each. And he was trying to get you in my little town to Kentucky Fried Chicken before the Church of Christ got out. So there wasn't much meat in a sermon. And I did not know the scriptures very well. And probably needed to know them a lot better, as we all do. But when I first met Jeannie, we had not even gotten married yet. We weren't even engaged, I don't think. And she went to something on the Sabbath that really bothered me. But I think I went with her. I can't remember. But it was called a walk for life. I'd never even heard of such a thing. But she was Catholic, and the Catholic Church is heavily involved in the pro-life movement. And from that time on, she was right and I was wrong. Is it right to do good on the Sabbath or to do evil? That's what Jesus said. And going out there and marching for the unborn to end this evil in our society is a good thing. You can do that in the morning and still go to church in the afternoon. But she said if we would all band together, we could eliminate that. Imagine that. You know, sometimes I don't think people realize what a scourge abortion is. And until you start digging into that issue, it's just something over there that's hidden. It made me think of a famous quote by a man named Edmund Burke. Many of you have probably heard this. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is what? Good men to do nothing and good women. And for a long time, the Christians have let the ungodly run things. And we are seeing the fruit of that in our country like never before. My daughter said something funny, and I hope y'all think this is funny. I'm not making fun of Kobe Bryant because he was an awesome basketball player, and I don't know much about him as a man. But she said, she sent me a meme back in the spring when everything just was going nuts, and she said, who knew that Kobe Bryant was the one keeping the world together? Because he died in a helicopter crash. And boy, has this world, or at least, we think of it as the American world because that's where we live. But you're seeing changes in your areas, in your country, in your states, in your cities that you never thought you would see in your life, especially you older people. You know, the younger among us, they see so much change in such a short time, they're used to it. But you know, I'm 52, and many of you are much older than I am. You guys have got to be reeling in what the country looked like when you were a young man or woman and what it's looking like today. And we were on our way down to the Feast of Tabernacles at West Tennessee Sabbath Ministry, not Feast of Trumpets, excuse me, which was on a Sabbath, so this year was a double Sabbath. And I was telling Jeannie, I don't think I knew this, I think I heard this the very first thing in the morning, that Ruth Bader Ginsburg had passed away. And if you know who she is, Supreme Court Justice, been on the court for a very long time. She was nominated by Bill Clinton. She was a Jewish lady. But you would have to say that a lot of her views, especially on abortion, flew in the face of her upbringing as a Jewish person. And there's a lot of Jewish people who are just like a lot of Christian people, that mama and daddy drug them to church forever, but they never really took to it. They didn't really believe all that garbage, and when they got old enough, they went out and did their own thing. And that must be what that lady was like. Although, you see some Christians and you see some Jewish people who still go to synagogue, still go to church, and will tell you that they're in good standing with the Lord, and they think abortion's okay. I'm sorry, it's not. But Jeannie said something to me. We weren't reveling in Mrs. Ginsburg's passing, because God says never do that. You know, even if your enemy suffers, God says don't. You know, she's not coming back from the grave, but he says, if I punish your enemy, don't celebrate, because I may relent. So we're not to be the kind of people who gloat. Pray for our enemies. What about praying for our enemies even when they're going through a bad time? I don't know if Mrs. Ginsburg's husband is still alive or not. I doubt it. He's not, okay. Most ladies outlive their husbands. But if he were still alive, we should be praying for him. Does she have children? I'm not real sure about that either. And if she does, we should pray for her family. But Jeannie said this to me in the car as we were discussing it. This is my wife's quote. My prayer has been, dear God, please stop abortion, because I know there is nothing I can do about it, but God can. And I'll go back to Herb's sermon yesterday. Things don't just happen. When did Ruth Ginsburg pass away? As trumpets was beginning at the end of the day on Friday evening. And so you might say, well, how is that in any way related to us sitting in here, the feast days, trumpets, and tabernacles now? Well, the lady that has been nominated in her place, her name is Amy Coney Barrett. She's a devout Catholic. She's the mother of 7 children, 2 of whom are adopted orphans from Haiti. And after going to Kenya, I don't want to cry, but there are a couple of little boys that I wish were in my family now from meeting them over there. And you know what's so horrible about this COVID thing? Like I said, we see everything as Americans, but I have part of my heart still in Kenya from those people I know there. They made, I think, roughly half of the orphans be sent home from the orphanage because of COVID. Back to a family that didn't want them, might have thrown them on the side of the road, and they found them there naked. Every child has their own story over there, just like everywhere. But they made them go home because they weren't safe at the orphanage. Governments are so foolish. And it's not just our government, it's the Kenyan government. Mary, who is the social worker there, and just a wonderful young lady, she was there when we were there. She was mid-20s. She was our guide the first trip. If we did anything that wasn't just strictly on the agenda, Mary took us there. She wasn't there when I went back the second time the following May, because she was off in college, but I did get to have lunch with her as we were going back to Nairobi to fly out. She got deathly ill twice. And why? She left the clean water that so many of you gave money to have that well dug, and they sent her home to her village, which was 2 or 3 hours traveling away. I don't know if Matt or Linda are back here or not, but if they are, they gave a seminar on this today, and Blake, you may know as well. She has been deathly ill twice. You know why? I don't have this from the horse's mouth, but I know how things work over there. Waterborne illness is the number one cause of disease and death in Africa. So she went home and drinking muddy river water. And I don't know where you guys live. In Alabama and Georgia, the rivers are pretty muddy looking from that red clay soil. And parts of Tennessee are that way too, but the mountains, it's crystal clear. Every river I saw in Kenya was running with that red clay dirt, and I wouldn't want to drink it. But we dug a well, you dug a well, and many others of like mind gave money and dug a well, and the Kenyan government sent those children home to drink muddy river water because they were worried about their health. Insanity. Insanity has taken the world. What about abortion? Total number of abortions in the U.S., and the statistics I could find were only from 73 at the passage of Roe versus Wade until 2018, so a couple of years ago. Who wants to guess? Anybody know? I've got 61.8, but up until today, it's probably 65, 66 million. And I was talking to somebody at lunch the other day about this, about how many people are not in the country because of abortion, and I never thought of the other side of this coin. Let's say 65 million people have been aborted, little helpless babies. They didn't have children. So how many people are really missing? Probably the estimate he gave me was 160 million people are not in this country that would be if we did not have the scourge of abortion. Now, I use the numbers of 61.8 million, and guess what I came up with? Because I like to put it in this statistic, which is, this is how Ron Dart brought it to me when I was a very green and newbie in this faith. And he talked about which states wouldn't be here if you remove the people. And here's what it is today. Florida, with a population of 21.8 million roughly. Tennessee, which I believe was almost 5 million. Alabama, 4.5 million. Georgia, 10 million. Louisiana, 4 to 5 million. Mississippi, don't remember their numbers. South Carolina or North Carolina, which North Carolina was bigger than South Carolina. All of those states' population would be gone, is gone. Not would be gone, is gone. That's almost the entire Southeast. Because the stats I saw said that West Virginia was in the Southeast. It ain't. But they said it was. John Adams had this to say about our Constitution. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Why did Mr. Adams say this? And I heard someone in the last couple of weeks discussing this exact thing, and he said, here's where we stand today. In previous generations, no matter which side of the political spectrum you were on, you both had an agreement that God was up here and the rest of us were down here. So even when you disagreed politically, you still believed that there was an ultimate lawgiver that you had to stand before at some point in the future. And you dictated the way you acted, at least in part by that most people. Now, there's been awful people forever, and we all know that. But, you know, everybody wants to condemn what we live in today as America, and we're going to talk a little bit about that condemnation. If you know the history of the world is this. You lived under a dictatorship of some kind where, like Jim said, they could come in your house and take anything you had two of, or a lot of times it was take everything and leave you with nothing to eat. And this country tried to do it differently. We've had our flaws. There is no doubt about it. Slavery is a scourge on this country, but this country sent hundreds of thousands of young men to stop that. And they died. Now, it's awful that it ever existed. And it makes me want to cry when I think about what some of those people went through. But if you lived in another country today, especially an African country or a South American country or a lot of the Asian countries, and you lived in a hut and ate rice or beans every meal of your life, you would realize that even if your ancestors suffered greatly in this country, that now you have it very good. But we don't teach people this anymore. We no longer live in a society where it's true that most people believe in God. Herb said yesterday we live in a post-Christian country. And it's very true. All of us in this room believe that there's a creator, an arbiter of what is right and wrong, a lawgiver. You know, increasingly, especially among our young people, they don't believe that anymore. And when you don't believe in God, you have to replace it with something. And here's what has become the replacement theology of today. I, or them, get to choose what is right and wrong. I get to choose what is moral and immoral. What is moral and immoral for you in this room is not immoral to me. I don't care what that book says. This antiquated book you all read says, because I don't believe that book. If you quote this book in public discourse now, you are mocked. That's where we've gotten to. Go look at the founding fathers with all their sins, with all their flaws, and look at the prayers that they uttered up and when they were asking God to direct them as they tried to create a constitution, as they tried to make the difficult decisions about signing the Declaration of Independence. Who in this room right now, if there was a Declaration of Independence, let's say our government goes completely haywire in the next couple of years and you can't even leave your house. And if you didn't believe that was possible, you just live through it. And what if it gets a lot worse? What if you can't go to the grocery store because you won't take the COVID vaccine? And there's this declaration of independence that we're going to break away from that government in Washington. Who's going to sign it? Who has the guts to sign it? Because that evil, non-God-believing government is not going to dictate how I live and my family lives. Who would sign it? You know what happens when you sign it? You lost your property. They're looking for you. If they found you at home, they killed you. I can't believe the British did not kill every signer of the Declaration of Independence. That was the dumbest war move of all time. They should have hunted every one of them down. And they did try to find some of them. And they burned some people's estates. But they did not go and eradicate the problem like they probably should have. But that's what these men dared. They gave everything. They probably all believed they were going to be hanged as traitors. But they did it anyway. If you know who Ted Cruz is, he's a senator from the state of Texas. And he just came out with a book that I only heard about this week. It's called One Vote. And the subtitle to the book is How a Single Supreme Court Seat Can Change History. And this was his subtitle from his book jacket. Americans know that the Supreme Court protects our constitutional rights, or at least is supposed to. If controlled by activist judges, however, the court can gravely damage our basic liberties. In an interview this week, I heard Ted say this, that over the past few decades, almost every major decision that affected your civil liberties, whether it be freedom of religion, freedom of speech, the Second Amendment, the right to own and firearms to protect you and your family, all of those major decisions, guess what the numbers were? Who knows how many? I want somebody under 20 to tell me how many people are on the Supreme Court. Nine. Thank you. Lily knew it as well. So what was the vote on every one of these major decisions? Who can do math? What?
5-4.
5-4, every one of them. Well, now the court should go, if Miss, what is her, Amy, all I can think of is Amy Coney Barrett. I can't say her last name by itself. Barrett. If she is approved and put on the court, it'll be 6-3 to people who you would think would vote to protect our civil liberties. Our founders recognized that our rights as children of God were given by Him and not by government. Every other system of government says your rights are given by who? The king, the dictator, the legislative body, which is a pretty new thing. I guess Greece and Rome had it. I don't know how much power they had. If Caesar didn't like something, I'm sure it didn't happen. So Jim, in his sermon on the Sabbath, talked about the mutually beneficial relationship that has governed our free society up until now. But we are on the verge of this no longer being the path that Americans choose for themselves. Amendment 1 of the Constitution reads, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. In past days, I'm sure most of us thought in our lifetimes we would never see an infringement on our right to gather and worship. But COVID has changed everything very quickly. I would like people to raise their hands on this. How many people in here live in an area where your church was not allowed to meet by government edict, whether it be city, state, or beyond? Just a quick guess, about a third, maybe a little higher, a little less. Did you ever believe that was possible in your lifetime? Okay, if you raise your hands, listen to this and raise it again if it's applicable. In your area where you were not allowed to have church services, did they have protests or riots in your area where people broke that edict that didn't allow so many people to get together and nothing was done to them? A few, not as many. So it was okay. And you know, right there in Article 1, you are allowed to peaceably protest. It says it. That's right there with freedom of speech. How many of these devolved and were no longer peaceable? A great deal. I know in Nashville, they caught the courthouse on fire. If you don't live in Tennessee, you probably didn't hear that. David Ladner made a little bit of a joke there about the Molotov cocktails in Seattle, but it's not funny. I'm a person who's very interested in politics, and I know not a llot of people are, and I know that Herb said yesterday that our salvation doesn't come from political power or governments. And it doesn't. I agree with that totally. But our oppression does. And therefore, the government we live under that we do get to still vote for is going to decide whether we can meet like this in coming years. That's why it's important. I've always heard of this book. It's called Rules for Radicals. I've heard of it for years. So I decided if I'm going to talk about it, I need to get a copy and read it. There it is. This book is called by many the Handbook of the Left or the Bible of the Left. If you want to know how influential this book has been on political thought in this country, think about a couple of facts. Hillary Clinton wrote her 92-page senior thesis on this book and its author. Saul Alinsky, that's the man's name. Our 44th president referred to himself as a community organizer, which is a term that was coined by Mr. Alinsky. And here's an op-ed from the Wall Street Journal dated February 26 of 2018 with the title, Saul Alinsky is the cause of our political divisions. And I'm just going to read a couple of quick paragraphs. To understand President Obama and Hillary Clinton, one must understand Saul Alinsky. In Alinsky's 1971 book, Rules for Radicals, in the chapter titled Tactics, please listen closely to this, he divides the electorate into demographic groups, today's identity politics, and says the organizer must rub raw the resentments of people groups. You get out there and you make one group hate another. Do we see that going on in our society right now? And is it awful? Alinsky organized people around the propositions of victimhood, resistance, the disrespect for others, intimidation, and if need be, resort to violence. The book's first page, right before the table of contents, he quotes three people who I assume he respects, because if you're going to put a quote in your book, you either respect them or you're about to have a treatise on why that person's a fool. The first quote is Rabbi Hillel. I don't know if that's a current rabbi during his lifetime or the famous Hillel who did the Jewish calendar. The second one was by Thomas Paine. Somebody under 20, tell me who Thomas Paine was. Common Sense. And what did Common Sense do? Or when was it written? It was one of the leading pamphlets that got the colonists thinking about breaking away from Britain. Thank you very much. So he likes that guy because he led to a revolution. Guess who the third quote is by? Lest we forget, at least an over-the-shoulder acknowledgement to the very first radical from all of our legends, mythology, and history, and who is to know where mythology leaves off and history begins, or which is which. The first radical known to man who rebelled against the establishment and did it so effectively that he at least won his own kingdom, Lucifer. And Saul Alinsky wrote that. We are in a spiritual war. Some people have chosen this as their Bible because they don't believe this is true. And they are living by what is set down in this book. And they hate our guts because just like Satan hates God and all its people, people who follow this hate Christians. It's true. This is not supposition. We are in a spiritual war. Mr. O'Brien quoted Dennis Prager as saying that he believes it is inevitable that the United States will become a communist country. Dennis Prager is a Jewish man, but a very devout person. And here's what this article is just so dead on for this topic. The article is entitled, I Finally Realized Why the Left Really Hates America So Much. Pardon me just a second. As long ago as the 1970s, I came to a major realization while watching my fellow students at Columbia University demonstrate not just against the war in Vietnam, but also America, which they spelled A-M-E-R-I-K-A. They called it imperialist, colonialist, mass murdering. I kept wondering, what made these people so hostile to the freest country in human history? And you know, Columbia is an Ivy League school, so his fellow students weren't poor people. This was very wealthy young people who had everything they ever wanted given to them, more than likely. He said, then one day, as a result of my having attended a yeshiva, an Orthodox Jewish school, through high school, the reason became very clear. Half of each day was devoted to religious study in Hebrew, and the other half was devoted to secular studies. This meant that I had been immersed in a religious worldview until college. Though it was Jewish, this worldview could also be called Judeo-Christian. Students at traditionally Christian schools were immersed in essentially the same worldview. We were all taught, and this is the whole key, we were all taught that the most important battle we need to wage in life was with our own nature. Jews and Christians learned from the same scripture that in Genesis 8:21, that the will of man's heart is evil from his youth. Therefore, being a good person involves a constant battle with our flawed human nature, our urges, our appetites, and our innate weaknesses. This battle is the only real route to a better world, is by bettering each and every individual. Every individual has to work on him or herself to be a decent, strong, courageous, and self-controlled, and every parent had to work first and foremost on raising such people. One day I came to realize this was not how the vast majority of my fellow students were raised. They were raised to believe that the great battle in life was not with one's own nature, but with all the outside forces, with their parents, in many cases, but most of all with the society they lived in, i.e. America. When confronted with these challenges, because everybody's had personal failure, loss, and disappointment, and unhappiness in their life, but when we were confronted with these challenges, that's religious Jews and Christians, we're taught to look inward for both the primary source of the problem and the primary solution to the problem. What have I done wrong? How can I change my life to solve my problems? And you know, we as Christians, God says, draw near to me and I will what? Draw near to you. So when we go through a rough time, don't we often try to draw nearer to God? So that's what we're trying to do as Jews and Christians. The left, which proudly rejects Judeo-Christian values, has adopted the opposite of the Judeo-Christian view. Leftists, as opposed to liberals, hold outside forces responsible for all their pain. It's always somebody else's fault. That is the reason for the litany of left-wing enemies: capitalism, patriarchy, misogyny, systemic racism, homophobia, transphobia, Islamophobia, sexism, xenophobia. It's difficult to overstate the damage the left is doing to this country by abandoning the fundamental Judeo-Christian teaching that we must first fight our natures in order to lead a more decent and happy life, and replacing it with the belief that we must battle America instead. This replacement inevitably leads to a population of unhappy, ungrateful, and mean-spirited human beings. It will lead to what the left acknowledges it seeks, the end of America as we have known it. And like I said, I acknowledge what Herb said yesterday, government is not our salvation, but it can be the means and has become the means and is moving toward becoming more of the means of our persecution. Another first time I ran into this idea, although I'd been thinking of it for a long time, was anybody at the winter family weekend? I think it was in 2018, possibly 2017, when Adrian Davis came down from Canada and gave that message, the search for patient zero. And he likened it to trying to find out where the first AIDS victim started, but eventually ended up telling us that Karl Marx is the beginning of the disease that is running rampant through our country, and how it tries to attack the family structure and destroy especially fathers. Revelations 1, verses 5 and 6. And from Jesus Christ, the faithful witness, the firstborn from the dead, and the ruler over the kings of the earth, to him who loved us and washed us from our sins in his own blood, and has made us kings and priests to his God and Father, to him be glory and dominion forever and ever. That's what Jim talked about. We all have a destiny beyond this world. But we also, as we walk through this world, have a destiny. We're supposed to stand up. We're supposed to be a light. Jesus called us the salt of the earth, or a light, or a city on a hill. And that's what we're supposed to be. And if I, and you, if you were speaking up here, are a priest, what is the job of a priest? Ezekiel says in 44:23, they are to teach my people the difference between the holy and the common, and to show them how to distinguish between the unclean and the clean. And I hope that my message at least addresses that in some degree. When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, we're in Esther 4:12, he sent back this answer. So what basically Esther says is, hey, I know you're telling me the world's about to end for you and me and all my family, but I don't have the courage to go in front of the king because he's probably going to kill me because I don't have permission. Do not think, this is what Mordecai says back, do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. So here's Mordecai's faith. But you and your families, you and your father's family will perish. And this is the sentence I want us to think about in our own lives. Who knows but that you and I, or he was speaking to Esther, have come to your royal position for such a time as this. You could have lived at any point in the history of the world, but you and I live today. What are we supposed to be doing as we watch this country fall apart? I can't give you every answer, but one of my answers is to get involved. You know, and we'll look at this scripture in a minute, but Jesus says people think the harvest is way off there, but I'm telling you now, the fields are ripe for the harvest. Any young person or political activist who uses this as their primer, their Bible, what do they need? This. How many times do we turn away from people because we don't like the way they look? They're not one of us. They've got too many tattoos. And why people tattoo their face or their neck, I don't know. But people do, and it's just different. But that doesn't make them a bad person. That's one thing I learned growing up with my dad. Is some of the crowd my dad ran with was some rough customers. But when you got to know them, there were some big bad dudes that came over to our house sometime, rode motorcycles and just some bad guys, as far as big and burly. Give you the shirt off their back, and if anybody ever messed with me or my dad, they'd have hurt them. Now, that doesn't make them a Christian, but it makes them a human being who cares for other people and who needs the same Savior you and I need. That's what the message is about. We are in the midst of a social struggle that may tear the fabric of our country apart, but we have got to fight for our rights, and even if they're all taken apart, we don't have to fear. Joseph was a slave. Joseph was risen up through slavery. Boy, he's got it everything now. He's running Potiphar's household. You know, let's just look in a modern equivalent. He was working for Bill Gates in that giant mansion on the West Coast, and he ran everything. When Mr. Gates was gallivanting around Southeast Asia on his yacht, he ran the whole thing. And then one day Potiphar was misled and threw the man into jail. So it all starts over again. I was a slave. I thought I was going to die. I thought my brothers were going to kill me. Didn't know what was going to happen when those Ishmaelites bought me. I'm back in prison. Woe is me. But we don't know exactly what Joseph did, because it isn't really outlined, but we know he never gave up on God and that God never gave up on him. And he became the second in command to Pharaoh, who was probably the most powerful man on the earth at that time. We know that in the book of Esther, not Ruth, but Esther, she becomes the queen. Who is Esther? Have you ever really thought about that? She is a Jewish slave. Basically, an exile, taken to Babylon. She didn't want to be there. She probably didn't want to be the queen. Think about that. When the king decides, I'm going to pick every pretty young girl, bring her to the castle, and over the next year, I'm going to interview each of them one night at a time. I don't know what was involved in that. Probably wasn't good. She probably didn't want to be there. But then Mordecai told her, you are here for a reason. Nothing happens by accident, right? Maybe every person you run into when you leave here today, when you go home, maybe God puts you in their way for some reason. You know, because of what I was going to talk about here, I have really tried to have a smile on my face every time I walk around our unit or ride my bicycle around our unit where we're staying, because I might meet somebody who needs to know why I'm happy. Because Peter told us to be ready to give an answer. I saw a lady this morning, an elderly lady, walking around, and she looked really depressed. And as I approached her, because we were coming down a street, we had a long time to come together, I said, God, if this woman needs something, let me give it to her. And all I was able to give her was a smile, because unfortunately, we live in a society where people don't even look at each other anymore. And that drives me crazy, because I am from the country. And if you don't wave at people going down the road, it bothers me, and it bothers other people where we live. You go to the grocery store now. I mean, who's had this happen to them? We walk past each other in a cart. I'm in your way. You're in my way. You're picking out soup. I'm picking out whatever. And, oh, excuse me, they won't even look at you. This lady passed me this morning. She had a bag of garbage in her hand, and I was trying to back out our van. It was when I was coming over here to bring Clara, and I was going to say hi to her. I still had my little project going. I was out the window of my car, so I'm higher than she is. She was right here. I could have touched her. She had a bag of garbage in her hand. I said, "Good morning, ma'am. How are you?" She did not look at me, and she did not speak to me. Now, she could be deaf. But she might not be. But that's where we live. I could not imagine that. In fact, my wife would probably say, if that person had said something back, I might still be sitting there talking to her right now. And she would know my life story and why I'm here, how many kids I've got, and she'd be trying to drag me to church. But I like people. You know, when we're judging other people as not being one of us, they're different from us, they're not somebody that needs salvation, then we're not doing what we should be. God tells us in the book of Mark to therefore, Mark 13, 35 to 37, keep watch, because you do not know when the owner of the house will come back, whether the evening or at midnight, when the rooster crows or at dawn. If he comes suddenly, do not let him find you sleeping. I say to everyone, watch. Pay attention. What's going on in your society? And then I thought of this scripture when I was reading that yesterday. And I use the New American Standard Bible because I like the way it phrases it. The prudent person. This is Proverbs 22, verse 3. The prudent person sees the evil and hides themselves. But the naive go on and are punished for it. If we are not watching and educating ourselves, we might fall for anything that this evil world and its ruler tries to lead us into. I got a treatise from somebody that I wish was here at the feast with us this year, but he's not. And it was pretty, I've begun to believe this a little bit anyway. He believes that the one world religion spoken of in the scriptures is not going to be like so many of us have talked about, big churches, or was it going to be Islam there after 9/11? But he said he believed it would be state worship. Where do we have an example of state worship in the Bible? Book of Daniel. It is my understanding that when Nebuchadnezzar made the statue, it was of himself, right? And it was a statue of gold. And you were supposed to bow down to it. And what happened to you if you refused to bow down when the trumpets blew? Threw you in the fire. And what did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say to him? You can throw us in there if you want to, but we're not bowing down to that. And God can save us. And then what else did they say? But if he doesn't, he still can make a way for us. I guess they understood a resurrection or whatever. But they knew that they couldn't do that, because this is the same thing you and I must know. Bowing to God and being close to him has to override anything a government tries to make you do, even if it costs you your life. And who would have thought in the United States of America that we would be considering whether that is a possibility? But if they tell us we cannot keep the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Trumpets, the Sabbath anymore, which path will we choose? Will we give up salvation to appease a government? And you know, none of us can really answer that question. You go back and ask a lot of German people, would you ever follow a madman and try to take over the world and kill half the population of a lot of countries? Heck no. 9-10 years later, Nazi Germany owns all of Europe. And I'm sure a lot of those people said, why did I do this? You know why they did it? You will join the army, or I will put a bullet between your eyes and your children's eyes and your wife's eyes. You know, you see when the kings are taken over by I think it was Hezekiah, when the king was taken over, and I may have that wrong, Assyria or Babylon took them over. What'd they do to him? They killed his sons in front of him, and then they blinded him. Why? The last thing he ever saw was the worst thing he ever saw. And he would never forget that forever. There has been some real cruelty that has ruled this earth. And if you know what communism is all about, where a lot of young people want to take us, the barbed wire does not face the outside trying to keep the intruder out. It faces the inside to keep you from leaving. As Isaiah says, as for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead you cause you to err and destroy your paths. Now, I'm not going to discuss the women ruling over them, because that's a totally different subject. But who are these people in our streets looting and burning? They're teenagers and 20-somethings mainly. Our young people who've been raised without God in their life are causing tremendous violence. Have you seen these videos where they go into a restaurant and they scream at families sitting there and they tell you if you don't raise your hand in support of them? I've wondered so often, what would I do in that case with my five or six? Well, I've got six kids, but they don't all live at home anymore, but three of them under 10 years old. What would I do? If I got up with Jeannie and the three little ones and Eli and we tried to push our way through the crowd, would I be hurt? And more importantly, would they be hurt? We don't want this in our country. What can we do about it? Well, that's up to you to decide. But try to do something about it before it's too late. Chris, I'm going to wrap up with this. The anti-poverty billboard. And I am illiterate on how this works, obviously. Okay, there we go. After the riots in Milwaukee, this was a billboard that a lady named Star Parker's organization, which is called Cure, put up in the neighborhoods in Milwaukee and I believe in Minnesota and in Philadelphia. And the Black Lives Matter leaders and the Antifa people complained so much, these were all removed because Clear Channel, which owned the billboards, was terrified of violence against their company. Now, what does this say? Finish school, take any job, get married, save and invest, give back to your neighborhood. And then it has Proverbs 10:4 on it. 10:4 says, he who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. The reason Star put these on there is because she's quoting these statistics, which are from the Brookings Institute. They coined the term success sequence after finding that only 2% of adults who follow these rules ended up living in poverty. Finish high school, get a job, and wait until you are at least 21 to get married. If you'll do those three simple things, you will have a 98% chance of not living in poverty. This is called racism. How is this racism? What Star Parker says is, why are these not rather inspirational role models of ambition in industry? There is no basis to object to the message or the portrait unless the protesters among you find that it is a threat to holding on to urban residents as a captive audience chained in envy and resentment rather than invited to ambition and industry. There was something else I wanted to read that she said, but I don't see it right here. But she said that these were taken down when she's trying to give these people a hand up, and she is a black lady. So of course this is not some racist message that she did. But she's racist because she's going against the thought. And you know, if you call me a racist long enough, I'll shut up, is what they think. Because we're afraid of being demagogued. But you know what? There's going to come a time when if I give this message or I talk about some of the things I've mentioned here, they might drag me off the stage. It's happened in Canada already. Especially if you speak against homosexuality. But I'm sorry, we can't quit speaking the truth. Think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego if you're ever put in those situations. Think about Daniel, who just like Joseph, rose to second in command in the most powerful country in the world, Babylon at the time. These were Jewish slaves. It's the equivalent of if we live in a communist country and Christianity is outlawed, that's the same situation you and I will be in if we continue to practice our beliefs and meet. Look what God can do for you even in that situation. I'm always reminded of a man in Holland who was taken captive by the Nazis early in the war, probably 40 to 41, was taken to a work camp. He knocked on the door of his own house 4 or 5 years later, and his wife had made dinner with a plate for him every night, hoping against hope that he was coming home. And finally, one night he did. And at that point, she couldn't believe he was alive. But the war had ended and he had been freed from some work camp. And you know what he said that I'll never forget? You know how I'm alive today? In my cell that they put me in at night before they came to get me to go work, a chicken came and laid an egg on the windowsill every morning, and I ate that, and I'm alive today because of it. That's pretty powerful, huh? So no matter how bad it gets, don't abandon God. If you don't do anything politically and you don't care how it goes, that's your choice. But draw near to God so that He will draw near to you and all of us. Pray for each other. We're all going through different struggles. There's probably people in this audience and in the broader audience who've lost their job to some of the restrictions of COVID-19. There's probably some of us who have lost family members. Draw near to God so that He will draw near to you. So that no matter what happens in our future, God's going to send us a chicken. I couldn't resist that. But you get my point. Thank you for your time today. Thank you for allowing me to speak to you. And just remember, if you find young people who think this is their Bible, don't be afraid to tell them that there's a God who loves them, that He has a Son who died for them. Because, you know, we're sometimes scared to share our faith with others, aren't we? And you never know how a simple word like, hey, I was in Bible study this morning, this scripture, something about it made me think that God wanted me to call you and tell you about it. You don't know whose life you can change. Let's go home and be a light into the world. Thank you.